You're with Joseph Arthur and his Technicolor Dreamcast on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good evening, everybody. Steve Kirsch is meant to join us. I think he is on live TV in Hawaii or something, but he is a freedom fighter. I think if you've been following the truth dialogue about COVID-19 and the vaccines, then you know who Steve Kirsch is. He's the guy that invented the wireless mouse, amongst other things. He's a very rich person who discovered ropey statistics when it came to the vaccine and his personal experience. He just, his Substack, Steve Kirsch's newsletter, is really worth checking out. He's always fighting for the truth to come out. He wrote this one: my speech at the CDC meeting today. I was selected to give a three-minute comment at the ACIP meeting today. This is the CDC's Advisory Committee on Vaccines. Here's what I'm going to say in the public comment section at 1 p.m. I'm going to read certain sections of this, so try to follow along. Sadly, my personal experience has been that my speech will not make a difference. I'm sure they will unanimously approve the booster for kids 5 to 11. I'm sure none of them will reach out to me to see the data. None of them will share their data publicly because they don't have it. I guarantee it. I'm going to skip ahead. Oh, well, this is a good part, though, about the chess thing. He says, you never win a game of chess by standing down. Here's his three-minute speech. Hi, my name is Steve Kirsch. I'm an executive director of the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation. I have no conflicts. I urge you not to approve the boosters because we now have new direct observational data that shows very clearly that the vaccine is killing more kids than it saves. But you shouldn't take my word for it, just like you shouldn't take their word for it. There's a very simple reality check that every member of the committee should do before this vote to find out who is telling you the truth. And you must do this research because the CDC death data for those under 25 is not complete for any date after January 2021. And the CDC death data does not indicate suspected COVID vaccine deaths. There is no post-marketing data on this. Do any of you know what the VAERS underreporting factor is and how it is calculated? Why not? According to the CDC's own methodology, it is over 40. Why have they never told you that? In short, the government has not provided you with key data you need to make a proper risk-benefit assessment. They have assumed that the vaccines haven't caused a single death. That simply isn't true, and you can now prove that yourself, just like I did recently using adult death data, which included vaccination status. The result is highly statistically significant and has not been disputed. I've made the data publicly available. How to get the data you need? The best way to get the data you need is to do your own post-marketing survey. Fortunately, there's an easy way for you to do this, and I want to share this method that I used. You can copy my method or come up with your own. Here's what I did. I have hundreds of thousands of followers on social media. I asked my followers, do you know any kids who have died since January 2020? How many died from COVID? How many might have died from the vaccine? Recall shouldn't be a significant bias because a child death from either COVID or the vaccine is an event that nobody forgets. So even if there is a bias towards recalling more recent events, the bias affects both options equally. If recall is high for these events and COVID and the vaccine have the same kill rate, we'd expect to have four times as many COVID deaths reported than vaccine deaths, since the time period was more than four times larger for COVID than the vaccine for this age range, 29 months versus 7 months. How do you explain the results? And if the CDC is correct that the mRNA vaccines haven't caused any deaths, the numbers should be very lopsided in dozens of COVID deaths and zero vaccine deaths. What I have found was the exact opposite. There were zero reported deaths from COVID, but there were 11 deaths that were judged to be vaccine related. All 11 deaths were previously healthy kids. 40% of the deaths happened in the first 7 days after vaccination. How do you explain that? If you cannot explain that, you cannot approve the boosters today. please replicate the results. Please replicate this study yourself or contact me for the names. I am happy to share the details of each of these unexplained deaths with the committee so you can do your own independent investigation, including viewing the autopsy report, which are available for at least 40% of the deaths. None of these deaths were reported to the VAERS system, suggesting that VAERS deaths are underreported by at least a factor of 10. If you cannot explain the results I got, you should not approve these boosters at this time. The data I received clearly shows the vaccines are doing more harm than good in this age group. There is simply no other explanation. So yeah, he goes on, he talks about summarizing it. He stayed up all night writing it, hoping it makes a difference, but he's not optimistic. I think the boosters did just get approved. I think I saw that right before the program started. So, and I guess we were heading in that direction. It seems tragic to me. And I believe these results that Steve made in his homemade test, the guy's brilliant. His life work proves that he's courageous. Hopefully he comes back on our show. I don't know if he's locked away in Hawaii or what's going on, but, pray for the kids and please ask around, get the data you need. It is there. It is available. He's showing us good ways that we can make a difference if we get active in our own lives. We'll be right back on TNT Radio.
When you listen to us, you're always guaranteed straightforward, easy to understand, coherent conversation.
That's why I've made it a priority my entire career to work closely with you from the time I got to the Senate 180 years ago.
And we stand by those words.
Well, I made very clear to Putin that we're not going to seek So the best way to get something done, if you hold near and dear to you that you like to be able to... Anyway.
Oh, man. Just stop talking.
TNT.
Mike Ryan is joining me. He is the boss of TNT. Mike Ryan is joining me. He is a pretty cool dude. Let's talk to Mike.
Me.
Thanks for saving me, Mike. How's it going?
Good. Let's see what happens when you wander past the studio and there's sweat pouring off the producer's brows. There you are. I was grabbed by the neck, said, get in, talk to Joseph. And I said, who's Joseph? No, not really. Joseph Heebie-Jeebie.
Well, what's this thing that you sent me earlier on Twitter, which is TNT Radio, TNT Radio funds Kennedy Award sponsorship in bid to raise profile of mainstream media critics. Oh. TNT Radio chief executive Mike Ryan. Oh. That's who we have on the air right now, folks. A Gold Coast-based radio station which criticizes the mainstream media. Gee, I wonder why we criticize the mainstream. It has stumped up $50,000 to fund the Kennedy Awards joining the fake red union-backed Australian Journalists Association. What's this all about, sir?
Well, first of all, I have to apologize. We had a call from Brad Pitt's manager saying that, get that picture of Brad Pitt off. And I said, no, that's me. No, just joking about the partner. Sorry. How I wish. But anyway.
Dead ringer.
I try to. That's
Fight Club.
Well, I could be Brad Pitt's neighbor because who knows what looks like, but it's not.
You could be Ed Norton. I mean, and it could be a Fight Club thing, and then they were the same person. So, in a way, you're Brad Pitt.
No, thank you. I can be if I want to be. I can be a girl. I can be a guy. I can be in between. I can be Brad Pitt. I am Brad Pitt. I'm delusional. Anyway, what we've done with this, and by the way, it's a first in the world. This is a mainstream journalist event, the Kennedy Awards, very important, very, very prestigious. And what we thought we should do is support it because we support good, truthful journalism. And anyway, it's the media, MEAA, that's the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance. They're up in arms because it's run by another union called Red Union. Anyway, what's happening is they're going to call boycotts. You know, get their journos not to attend, not to put their hand up for an award because of politics. And that's what it is. It's politics. What we do tell the truth. We're not afraid to take a punch in the nostrils and give it right back. And we're big enough and bold enough to do that. Not afraid of mainstream media or the union, the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance. By the way, they are a good union, or used to be. I used to know them quite well. They used to be a good union. But all, like most things, you know, they lose direction and are politically motivated. That, you know, it's like in the US, you find most unions are on the side of all things, Democrats, who really, the Democrats don't do much for the workers anyway, but for some reason, maybe money speaks all languages. Same here, though. We have the Media, Entertainment and Arts Alliance. We have the ACTU, which is the big union group, basically, Joseph, and they are all politically aligned. They are aligned with the Labor Party, which, by the way, is no different than the Conservatives we have here, because both parties have created havoc with Australians' lifestyles and have just encroached beyond all belief. So we have really, there is no distinction. Somebody said to me this morning, the difference is on the left, you're going to die by fire, and on the right, you're going to drown to death. So still, at the end of the day, you still die. So what we've done anyway, we've are supporting a great, great event. And hopefully we can do a very good job, give it justice, try and remind journalists that they do have a right to tell the truth and not to be afraid of not telling the truth, no matter what management says, whether you work for a Murdoch corporation or whatever corporation you work for. A journalist has to tell the truth. Don't tell the truth. Don't be a journalist.
You say here, what we are saying, we know it's against the narrative. We know climate change is a real issue at the moment, but we disagree with what the mainstream media are saying. He said, Mike said, it doesn't mean we're wackos. We are wackos, though, but just not in the way they would label us.
Well, we're no more wackos.
We're the good kind. We're the good kind of wackos. But let me ask you this. Is this an award that pays attention to real journalism, or is it kind of like a Grammys thing where it rewards music that kind of isn't up to snuff? Or like, will they award journalists that acquiesce to the narrative, or will they award actual journalists?
They award actual journalists. People who, but see, here's the thing. I mean, I always think, and I have a quandary here. A journalist should tell the truth. I mean, they're a storyteller, but a true story. Yeah. And if you are told to tell the narrative of what your management says, which are nobbled by government bureaucrats, crooked owners, the works. I mean, it's just like a doctor. Should a doctor tell people that they really don't know whether the injection you're getting is safe, because they don't, but they say they're safe. So the doctor itself, the medical profession, the bureaucrats are lying through the teeth because they don't know the end result. Now, emerging evidence, and you mentioned it before, the injection we get is very harmful, but the doctors, most doctors don't tell the patient otherwise. And if you fall off the perch, as we would say, well, it's just bad luck. Like in South Australia, we have at least four children, we found out, just have died from receiving that injection. Now, those four kiddies, they were very healthy until some bastard made them take the injection, and they should be held responsible. So back to the journalist thing, journalists should report the story. Tell the truth, but they don't. And my issue is that, I mean, it's like, why are you working as a propagandist and not as a journalist? And
it's money. That's money, straight up.
Follow the money.
Money and influence. Yeah. That's it. And the name tag, because there's no sort of moral calling, or else you would be led to tell the truth against the whole big weight of shame, social shame.
Look, while we're here and talking about the penal colony, known as Australia, because you know, we're only a very young country, and we got all the convicts, those that stole potatoes and stuff, and they were sent to Australia to out of the gloom and doom of the UK where England. It rains every day. Yeah. They were sent to Australia where you got the great beaches. Now, there were no McDonald's then. No, you couldn't buy beer, so that probably would have been a problem. But, otherwise you've got beautiful fresh air and a great lifestyle. But South Australia, now, this is in all the states. Queensland has done it, and all the states are about to do it. Let me read this to you. Under new laws in South Australia, anyone found breaching COVID-19 rules could be handed a 2-year jail term or a $20,000 penalty, while businesses could be fined up to $75,000. Now, instances of not complying include ignoring vaccine mandates or refusing to wear a face mask when visiting high-risk settings such as hospitals, disability care and nursing homes. And it's backed up by the you talk about wackos, it's backed up by, we call them the Greens, the truly terrible, they are destructive beyond all belief.
Anyways, that's the bad kind of wacko.
Oh, they are very bad. They're the Charles Manson wacko.
Yeah, they're the bad
they
kind.
Are.
There's the good wackos and the bad wackos.
We're the good ones.
We're the good wackos.
But it just shows you, though, that, I mean, if you look at all the World Health Organization, Tedros, who's not a good man. He's he's not loved in Ethiopia or any of those places. He's he's got a very dark history. So you got these people who are wanting to rule the world, and they are achieving it because we have the WHO pandemic treaty. Now in Australia,
it's just coming out. This is new, right? This is just announced.
Well, it's been
now,
around for a little while, but the 22nd of this month is when they
this month.
Yeah, they get all together again because it's there at the moment. And what happened is that the US has given some new directions, some new ideas, some new suggestions, which they're going to enact on. And this says that if there is a crisis in a country on health, that they can step in and say, we're taking over your country.
Yeah, now, I can read it for you. I have it right here.
But
proposed amendments stand to change everything that we lose a lot if we remain complacent. Essentially, the proposed amendments give power to the Director General of the WHO, Tedros, the bad wacko, which would give him the right to declare health emergencies at will and act on his own. The WHO would have the power to decide what constitutes a pandemic and to decide to quarantine measures on a global scale. So that's insane. Sorry to cut you off. Keep going.
Now it is insane. And what it means, though, is that when they do the treaty is sort of like a bit bigger and better. But someone said today that countries can tell the people who set the treaty up to bugger off, as we would say. Like Trump, you'd say, we're not going to be part of the World Health Organization because we fund you. So we're not going to do it anymore because you guys are crooked. But what it means, though, is that when this new treaty comes in, because at the moment they have to basically go to the country and say, look, we've got to work through this. Oh, yes, okay, you can come in and take over us. What it means is in 2 years' time is that Tedros alone can say, I've decided that Australia or the UK or America
has to,
you are under our control. You are under our
control,
which is crazy. So it's only up to him. And who's involved with who is the IMF, World Trade Organization, the UN, all these. So what we have, as Patrick Henningsen said a few hours ago, is that we have, in effect, the setting up of a global government. That is really scary. If people say, it's not going to happen, it's happening right now.
And simulation theory wise, it's called the who, like the WHO, the band. And there's something here. Like, just
you
if this is
you
a
bet.
Simulation,
you
it's
better,
called
you bet.
You better, you, you bet. Like, this is a magic. This ain't the magic bus I wanted to ride on, Mike.
No,
I mean,
it's not.
You know, this is
it's
a
the
strange
Titanic
bus. It's this ain't the magic bus. This is the Titanic.
Yeah.
It's like, but it's called WHO. It's this. That's interesting.
It's great, except we know who. and we got Gates, got Soros, and all these other, as you would say, lovingly, wackos.
Right, right.
So come back. You've got, look, keep your bathroom break to the news, please.
Yeah, for sure. I'm here. I'm right with you. It's just that, ground control's signaling to Major Tom, coming up with Jeremy Beck, an Australian election update.
Well, it's very interesting because we have, they say every election, you got your midterms in November, which are going to be truly interesting. And it's how good the Democrats can get their propaganda over and convince people that they're the ones that are going to save their lives from the impending climate emergency or climate disaster, the impending COVID. You're all going to die some way. You're going to die of climate change, or you're going to die of COVID, and we can save you. I mean, as Joe Biden said, though, I mean, he may be old and everything, but his latest thing is, Joe Biden says he is the only one that can win the election from Ronald Reagan. That's how nuts he is. I mean, he's truly, the guy should just disappear. So there you are.
I'm concerned what Geert Vandenbosch has been saying about how the pandemic is actually going to get pretty intense.
It is.
Did you happen to stumble upon that interview? And I'm curious what your take is on that, because we just see how people acquiesce to totalitarianism, even when it's kind of exaggerated and propagandized. But what happens if it gets legit, even if it is mainly vaccinated people that are getting really, really sick? Even if that becomes the case, it's still really concerning with what we've seen of humanity so far.
But what do they do if you have a World Health Organization, and in your country you got Fauci? You've got all these people running around and say, look, COVID's come back. It's really serious. It's killing everybody. But what should be in brackets is the reason why it's doing this is because you gave them this bloody injection in the first place, and you made them get sick because your immune system is just about been wiped out, if not completely wiped out. So if a cat goes past you with a sniffling or something, you could very well get sick from that cat because you've got
death
nothing.
Death by a sniffling cat. the indignity of it all. I mean...
death by a rabid
pussy. But we see the way propaganda works and how effective it is, even though we're going to all see that and it's going to be hard to ignore. People are just in a trance with this stuff. And once fear comes crushing down that's actually legitimate, man, I can't imagine how effective the propaganda will be at that point.
Thank God
will be in place.
But what about the deaths? I mean, the amount of people that are going to get sick. And they, this is these mongrels. They haven't disclosed. When they say, "Oh, it's safe," it is not safe because it's still a trial. So if it's still a trial, it's like open the look at the 737s. Oops. I mean, so are we on a 737 that they're saying it's safe? Oh, we needed to do a few little fix-ups here and there to stop the plane from deciding to nosedive. Is that going to happen to us with those that have been injected? Are they going to take a nosedive because the people that are in control of your health did not do their job properly? They were tarnished by the dollar, by that lump of gold. They should be ashamed of themselves, and they need to be held accountable, because the world, I think, is in for some tough times.
Oh, without a doubt. Steve Kirsch's newsletter, to bring him back into it, a survey shows over 500,000 killed by COVID vaccine so far. A simple survey anyone can do provides convincing evidence that the COVID vaccines have killed over 500,000 Americans. They should be halted now. You should check out Steve Kirsch's Substack to go further into that. But I mean, and that's the same sort of thing Mark Crispin Miller, who is the... teacher of propaganda at NYU, says, and his Substack is excellent too, and he always lists every week those that have died suddenly, and it's a sad newsletter to read, but informative. There's so much more death and destruction from these shots than the media is letting on at this point.
Now Jeremy's waiting. I can see him in the studio across the aisle. He's waiting for you.
And then if they're also texting, break. So I guess we got to wrap it up.
I enjoyed your song.
Oh, thanks.
No, it needed more harmony. A bit more harmonies in it, though. A few harmonies.
Sing along with me. My crying on TNT radio. He loves the heebie-jeebies, but now it's time for Mike Ryan to go. Goodbye, Mike Ryan.
Goodbye.
We'll see you soon.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Mike Ryan. Thanks for doing what you do.
Goodbye.
Mike Ryan.
Good.
The head of TNT. Oh, yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Goodbye.
Election 2022, and Australia decides on Saturday, May 21st. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Now we have nearly arrived, and it's only a matter of hours before all voting Australians will have made a decision which may seal our fate for the next few years. Whatever the result, the fight for freedom must continue post-election day. While the legacy media has distorted the big issues in this election campaign, I must say it was great to see Professor Gigi Foster's appearance on ABC's Q&A last night. Hopefully she will stimulate some thinking among Australians before they vote tomorrow. She slammed the assumption raised by host Tony Jones that Australia has managed to achieve one of the lowest death rates and best performing economies through this pandemic, as if government restrictive actions helped. But correlation does not imply causation, which Professor Foster wisely explained. Let's hope this adds some extra votes tomorrow for the many freedom-loving candidates. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
This is the sound of a generation rising above. The commemorative Air Force honors the heroes of yesterday while educating and inspiring the heroes of tomorrow. You can learn more at soundsofhistory.org.
When the world's endangered animals need help most, when their lives are at greatest risk, the International Fund for Animal Welfare is there, taking action to rescue the animals we love. See how you can help at joinifal.org.
As Joe Biden negotiates his way out of the room, we don't negotiate with the truth. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we're back on TNT Radio. I'm Joseph Arthur, and here is Jeremy Beck with an Australian election update. Jeremy, take it away. How you doing?
Hello, Joseph. How you doing yourself?
Yeah, doing good, man. Got good energy today. Feeling good, but the world is crumbling before our very eyes. Tell us, is there any good news coming out of Australia with the election updates, or what's going on there?
Well, at this stage, we're one day away. The voting will occur on Saturday, the 21st, and it's the 20th in Australia right now. So I think there is a lot of energy there among the freedom-fighting candidates, just really, really just putting everything, 100%, 110% of effort into their campaigns because they know how important this issue is. And the mainstream media has pretty much ignored them. Just about everywhere you go, that the media's mainstream legacy media is just pathetic. But I did see with great interest last night, there was Professor Gigi Foster is on there, and she managed to get on the ABC Q&A program, which is pretty good because, you know, that's our major Australian government broadcasting organisation. And seeing her on TV expressing some sanity around the oppressive measures of the lockdowns and the whole mandates that have just been such a disaster for Australians. And the government cannot claim that we've somehow achieved this magically low death rate and the rest of the world failed and our measures were just totally appropriate. And Professor Foster, I mean, she just said quite plainly, basically that you can't attribute the government action to the result. There are many other factors. There's geography, there's demography, and just saying that because we locked down and we pushed the mandates, etc., that does not mean that that's why we had lower death rates. There are many other factors because there are many countries, particularly in Africa, where you saw very low death rates and very low vaccination rates. And some of those countries didn't even do any lockdown or anything significant, such as Tanzania. They just went along as per normal.
Well, we know vitamin D plays a huge factor, and the sunlight is, you know, jam-packed with that. So that could have a huge thing to do with it, you know, and the use of ivermectin in Africa
definitely
helps.
And the suppression of early treatment is a big issue, and many of the candidates in the Freedom parties have made a point of that. So there are several Freedom parties who've made a big issue of this in the election. Of course, you've got the Liberal Democratic Party, you've got the One Nation Party, the Clive Palmer's party, which is the United Australia Party, which Craig Kelly is associated with that party. They're the three big parties are pushing the Freedom line. And then there are a number of independent candidates as well. But overall, I see their vote will be very, very significant, particularly in the Senate, which is our upper house in Australia, which is the House of Review. Whereas in the lower house, which is the house which forms the government, it's not that likely that we'll see significant numbers of Freedom-style candidates getting elected. It is possible, but it's a tall order to get 50% plus one, which is how the voting system works. Because the majors, the Labor and the Liberal parties, which are pretty much the two biggest parties in Australia, if they preference each other to block out any third force, then the Freedom candidate really has to get more than half the vote, which is an extraordinary ask. It is possible, and there is a revolt in some areas, such as in Hunter, which is in an area in New South Wales, which has very dependent on coal mining. The voters there is a huge backlash. It's possible you could get, for example, a One Nation candidate getting elected on the back of the other preferences with the other Freedom parties, because if they shut down coal-fired power stations and coal mining to push this zero net carbon agenda, their jobs are gone. The whole thing is completely insane. If we were to try zero net carbon, you know, maybe you might try nuclear power, and even then it's silly, but nonetheless, the major parties haven't even looked at nuclear power. So to try and go down zero net carbon would just totally destroy our economy. So there are big issues there. You've got the COVID issue of suppressed freedoms. You've got the issue of the climate crisis, which isn't, because there's no climate crisis at all. And then you've got the war issue, which we're just pelted nonstop day in, day out about how terrible Vladimir Putin is. He's the next Hitler, and Australia has got to save Ukraine's democracy. What a joke. Ukraine's one of the most corrupt regimes, and they're just effectively a puppet state. But the Australian public are being fed all these things to mix everything around in the election. And unless they're looking at alternative media, they wouldn't have much of a clue generally from the mainstream media.
Who is the One Nation candidate in Hunter? I believe me and Mike talked to him during the big Australian freedom rallies the other day. Remind me of his name.
You put me on the spot here. I've been following many different candidates, and not just in Australia. I'm also following the midterm elections in the US and all the primaries. So there's right. a lot to keep up
no,
with.
There's a lot of names to remember.
There are 150 House seats in Australia. And each of those, there are numerous candidates. So it's a lot to remember.
But you reckon in Hunter, there's a decent chance because of the mining culture there. And I'm wondering, is there any polling going on, like in the U.S.? Do the polls display any chance that the Freedom parties might prevail?
In the United States midterms, I'm talking about
Australia. Is there similar polling things going on in Australia? I'm just trying to get a temperature if it's possible for these Freedom parties to win and hopefully preserve people's civil liberties.
It's certainly possible for the Freedom candidates to get elected in the Senate, and undoubtedly some will. There's no doubt about it. Some will get elected, that's for sure. It's just the question of how many. And also the question is, will they have the balance of power? Will they have the numbers that they could block one or the other of the major parties? So if for example, you have a Labor victory nominally, which seems likely according to the polling, although our Prime Minister Scott Morrison might just get by, only just. But if, for example, Labor just had a narrow win, and the opposition leader's Anthony Albanese, and if he didn't have the numbers to form a majority, he might be reliant on some of these Freedom candidates to form government if one of those happened to be in the lower house. And in the upper house, a similar thing applies, where they could block legislation in the Senate. So it's very, very likely we'll get several Freedom candidates elected in the Senate. It's even possible that we'll get one or two, or maybe more, in the House. So it's going to be particularly interesting in the Senate, because the way our system works, the proportional representation, you know, we will definitely get several candidates elected in the Senate who will put up a fight against this rot that we're seeing. So it's just going to be very interesting to see how big a revolt there is.
Well, and speaking of revolts, what's the temperature like of the people of Australia? Like you mentioned that a lot of them are still just completely embedded in the propaganda narrative, but how many of them are sort of, is there a big freedom push? I mean, we talked to a lot of the people in the freedom movement, but what's the word on the street? I mean, are people getting fed up with all this oppression?
Certainly, there is a huge freedom movement. We've seen protests nonstop. I was at the Freedom Rally in Melbourne on Saturday, last Saturday, and it was really an electric atmosphere and thousands of people blocking up the streets, and it's really exciting to be there. In fact, I was really, really pleased to see some of the expressions on the faces of the bystanders who happened to come across all these thousands of people walking down the streets interrupting their day. And some of the people who are just clearly just in the usual popular culture and relying on mainstream media were really quite shocked to see thousands of protesters you know, against the vaccine mandates and the whole COVID agenda. And I remember just seeing one young lady in particular, and she just looked godsmacked. She had this, her mouth was wide open, and she just couldn't believe it. And it was just good to see that, you know, we're obviously sending a shock to the people out there in the general population, because there's still a huge number of people in the general population who've swallowed the propaganda. You only have to walk into a shopping centre and see that there's a significant percentage of people still wearing face masks, even though you don't have to. The face masks were at one stage compulsory in the shops, but now they're only compulsory in just a small number of areas, such as public transport. But in the shops, you don't have to wear them now, but even still, there'd be a good, I don't know, maybe a quarter of the population are still wearing them. Maybe not that many, but it depends where you go. But a significant number of people, and you think, why are you doing this? You don't have to.
Yeah, well, and I think that it's all just sort of like fake sense of the pandemic coming to an end and the fear campaigns coming to an end, because I think they're gearing it back up in this, what Mike and I were talking about, this WHO pandemic treaty is very alarming. And then now we have monkeypox. Have you been seeing any reports on those? That's the new thing, the new vaccine they've already developed for monkeypox. So they got the vaccine before the condition even really arrived. But
yeah,
are you familiar?
I've seen all sorts of reports like that, and I'm following so many different lines and conspiracies. What I do know is that at the moment, don't think that it's gone away. The people behind the scenes clearly want these powers. They won't give up. Why have we still got a state of emergency when clearly there is no state of emergency? It's clear that there are deeper agendas. At the same time, it's pretty hard for them to keep pushing this narrative when the evidence is just going all the other way. So it's a political fight. It's not going to be over after Election Day here in Australia, and it won't be over for many, many months. So I think that this battle could be ongoing for several years, really. This pandemic treaty of the World Health Organization will probably take, you know, a couple of years or so to put in place, because there'll be a lot of argy-bargy among all the different players all over the world. Some nations will try and get around certain things and push certain different wording. At the same time, if it's anything like the climate change treaties, they might just swallow it all and go along with it, and we could be seeing some kind of a WHO treaty much sooner than we'd like. But the decision won't be finalised next week, as some people say it will be, but certainly it's a dangerous time when they're pushing this treaty, which would lock nations into to horrendous mandates and lockdowns, and they'll be seen to be some pariah if a nation didn't go along with those World Health Organization directions. So that's obviously a big concern we all have. But at the same time, with our sovereignty has been undermined for many, many years in many ways, this is just another, you know, move in a dangerous direction.
That and freedom of speech being attacked left and right, it's an interesting time to be alive. But I think, like what Mike says, we're heading into some very tumultuous waters for sure. I really have fear, especially, and I keep bringing it up, but the Geert Vandenbosch interview and his prognosis that this pandemic might surge in very dangerous ways. What's your take if that happens, if that nightmare scenario happens, where you can no longer say, well, there is no pandemic and all these restrictions are ridiculous? What happens if the sickness emerges in a real way?
Well, that is a big concern, and if there is any evidence of antibody-dependent enhancement or anything along similar lines where the so-called vaccines make disease worse over the medium to long term, and that will be a real factor. But at the same time, all that extra sickness by the authorities won't want to admit that it's their jabs that caused it.
No, of course not.
They'll just say that, well, it's clear, the evidence is here, people are sick, and they are, and how could you deny that? And they'll put it down to something else. In a similar way that we've had all sorts of excuses for real phenomena. For example, in Australia, we've had terrible bushfires, and that's been blamed on climate change, when in actual fact it has nothing to do with climate change. But it's a real thing. People in those bushfire areas have really suffered enormously. They've lost their homes. There's been huge areas burnt out, and that's a real thing. You can't deny that. But then they blame it on climate change, when it's really due to locking up areas in national parks and building up a fuel load, and it just builds up and builds up, and once it dries out, there's all this extra fuel load, and then you only need a bit of a spark, and then it all goes up in smoke, and then it's nothing to do with climate change. Same with the health issue. There will be likely a real phenomena with people getting sick, because these jabs clearly weaken your immune system, and I'm very concerned that there will be a lot of sickly people in the next year or two. And if they keep taking the booster jabs, well, then that will be only getting worse. And they won't blame the jabs. They'll blame some other virus.
Well, but it's a multifaceted problem, because not only do they weaken your innate immune system, but they also bolster the virus. That's the issue, because you're vaccinating into a pandemic. So you're supercharging the virus that must evolve beyond the protective systems that the so-called vaccine do actually offer. I mean, they do fight it to some degree, or have fought the original one in a lackluster way, obviously, but enough of a way to where the virus will evolve into something truly deadly. So, and his prognosis as well is that ivermectin is going to be the way out, or antivirals. But yeah, I mean, I'm really concerned. And you know, over 100,000 fentanyl deaths in the U.S., young people dying of drug overdoses, suicide going through the roof and all that. It's like, I just don't know how humanity's going to be able to overcome another season of extreme restriction and isolation and a world gone mad. You know, that's really concerning.
Well, it is, and we've been attacked on so many fronts, which is really an end phase of this globalist agenda. And I was very awake at the time of the Y2K so-called crisis, which didn't end up being a crisis, and then 9/11. And I saw the hands of the globalists trying to make use of these crises, whether real or imagined. And now, 2 decades later, it seems like some of these elites, globalists, think that this is their end game and they're going hell for leather, pushing everything they possibly can. And we've been attacked on so many fronts. I'm very concerned about the war drive as well, because if you keep pushing Putin into a corner, you know, that risks nuclear war. And then all these other issues are insignificant if the whole planet gets wiped out in nuclear warfare. Now, I'm not saying that will happen, of course, but it's still a danger. There are so many dangers that we face. I don't think anyone on either side really want the nuclear war option, because they realize the consequences. But if you keep pushing Putin into a corner, that might come to that. So there's so many threats, but a lot of people aren't aware of these threats. And I notice in the United States, the vast majority of the congressmen voted to send weapons to Ukraine, which is only going to inflame the situation and prolong the war. And there was only a handful, relative handful, of senators and members who voted against that move. And they were all Republicans, not one Democrat.
Rand Paul.
Yeah.
Rand Paul, chief among them. Yeah, $40 billion, and there's no baby formula on shelves here. It's absurd. It's just really, really crazy. And then you have all that going on, and then Congress is meeting about UFOs. So pretty soon there's going to be chaos from the skies and an alien invasion on top of a nuclear war, on top of a pandemic. Lord have mercy, Jeremy. We're giving a doomsday radio show right now. We need God. We need an act of God to pull us out of this mess, man. I don't know. It's all you can do is keep your spirits up and you know, put one foot in front of the other and really work on your own emotional health and your own health and everything. I mean, because this world is going absolutely crazy right now, and the prognosis don't look too good, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think without God, you know, we'd be in a real mess, because, you know, we all know we're born and we will all die, guaranteed. We don't know when, but one day we're going to meet our maker. And from that standpoint, you have much more freedom in life when you realize, well, let's not fear and panic over these issues. Let's just do something that we know to be true and just and honest. And
yes,
then it'll be what it'll be. But we can only do our best to educate and agitate the population out of their apathy and out of their ignorance. And the more we can do that, the better the outcome will be. So I'm not predicting doom and gloom, although we are in very dangerous times, and I'm sure we're not past the worst of it by a long shot. But nonetheless, if you go into life with a good attitude and just that sense of, you know, we're created in the image of God, and let's do God's work.
I like that. Educate and agitate. That is our job. I mean, that is what we must do to help people through these waters. And yeah, having faith is a huge importance at this point in time. I mean, you got to keep your spirits up, you know, and a lot of people are sleepwalking, you know, so I don't know,
well,
but
I think,
educate
I think
and agitate.
People, I think a lot of people do that as a protective measure because things are so horrible. And rather than facing that, they want to bury their heads and pull the rug over themselves. And they've got the security blanket, if you like, or whatever, some entertainment that they'll indulge in rather than face the real world. But that's not going to make the real world go away. So at the end of the day, if you face the real problems but do something about those problems, you can actually live a much happier life than pretending it's not there and subconsciously really knowing that it is there.
Well said. Well said. I mean, yeah, you got to frame your days with a spiritual practice and exercise and make sure. I think it's imperative to dig deeper than ever before now and really dig into your creative spirit and ask God what you can do to help elevate humanity in general and become a light, because, you know, that's the only way out of this is through prayer, I would say, and education and agitation, you know, and just keep speaking the truth, keep telling the truth. You know, what Steve Kirsch outlined is you can do your own surveys. You can find out things. You can uncover the truth even in your own little world, you know. Uh-oh, there's the music for the minute mark. Thanks, Jeremy Beck, for coming on and giving us that update. Really appreciate it.
And thank you, Joseph.
Yeah, you're welcome, and we'll talk to you again real soon. Everybody, keep listening. You're listening to TNT Radio. We'll be right back.